Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy Podcast from Destinations International, the international trade association representing destination organizations. This podcast has been exclusively produced by Relic Agency. I'm Andreas Weisenborn, joined with Jack Johnson of Destinations International. Today, we are proud to welcome you to our podcast in a title we both share in part or in full, Advocacy. For this series, we wanted to tell the story of usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and key advocacy moments for them. We tend for these stories to tell the tale in full, containing both joy and triumph or crisis and disappointment. Each month, we will be joined by guests to tell their tale and a key moment in their destination's history. These are your architects of destination advocacy. For this month's episode and our fourth, we wanted to spend some time at the beginning to expand on what is happening in our world and sector during this moment in time we are currently in. So first and foremost, in the beginning, we're in the middle of summer, and I just want to say a big thank you to everyone who joined us in Baltimore for our annual convention. I know it was kind of a wild one for many of you. This was your first time back, as it was for us as staff. Some staff that we've hired that we had not seen in over a year and a half. But as a person who used to formerly work at the Baltimore CVB, I do want to give a special shout out to Al and his team and everyone at Visit Baltimore. It was an incredible honor to be back, kind of a little bit of homecoming for myself at that city and at the destination. And also, again, a big, huge thank you to all the members who came out to all our sessions, you know, in particular, the sessions for myself and Jack for both the New Tourism Lexicon and the Community Shared Value Roadmap. Those were things we had been working on for well over a year since the last time we were on the annual stage, albeit virtual. So super happy and super glad so many of you found it helpful. Contact us right away to get the downloads and whatnot on it. So again, just wanted to end that on sort of a huge thank you, since we know since then we're kind of entering a sort of a weird new world with what Delta, and I'll talk a little bit at the end of that, but I just wanted to kind of end that on gratitude. Also want to put out, we do have an upcoming slate on some of our events. So first upcoming is going to be with our partnership with PCMA, which will be our Destination Celebration event. This is occurring October 6th in National Harbor, Maryland. This is, like it says in the title, a celebration for our industry as part of it. It is in person only, in partnership with PCMA, and registration is live for that right now. In addition, the day after it, we are hosting our Convention Sales and Services Summit, also in National Harbor, Maryland, on October the 7th. This is the summit for you sales and services professionals out there. This is going to be a key one for many of us, since a lot of us are looking at what does the return of major events, metrics and all that type of stuff in this sort of new world. So would highly recommend, if you're coming to National Harbor for celebration, stay the extra day and attend in one of the summits. And of course, myself and Jack's personal favorite, Advocacy Summit, and also CDME are taking place at the end of October in Houston, Texas. This is, again, right now currently stated to be live in person. But if you just started or are finishing up your CDME or in the middle of the process, you know, from Baltimore or whatnot, this will be happening the weekend before Advocacy Summit. So those dates are October 23rd and 26th. And then immediately starting after that, we are starting Advocacy Summit, which then goes October 26th through the 28th. In addition, we also are doing something a little bit fun in between CDME and Advocacy Summit, and we're going to be launching our own sort of micro summit on funding. This is going to be exclusively brought to you all by our friends at Civitas and John Lamith, the crew. So if you have questions on funding, TIDs, everything that's going on with the EDAs and whatnot, highly recommend you consider looking at our little funding micro summit taking place on October 26th. And again, right now, all these events are currently slated to being live in person only. But the kind of final point I wanted to put out there is that we are, of course, monitoring and heavily watching the situation with Delta and what it means for our communities and also to host events safely. It is something we take to the utmost regard to being serious and to, you know, have a safe and healthy meeting for all of us. So, you know, we are constantly reevaluating the situation that we can administer a safe and healthy meeting as far as that. So I know many of you are also looking at Delta and what it means for your community. And so we are as well, and certainly mindful to that and the world around us. So with that, again, big thank you to everyone for listening, liking, subscribing. We do really do appreciate it. And we thought it's time to actually get on to our first guest. So as we say earlier, each month, We always try to interview a guest on their tale of advocacy and the role it played in a pivotal moment in their destination. But for this episode, we want to try something a little bit different. And our guest in our talk today is someone who actually helps destinations and engages with destination organizations on the very medium we're actually speaking on today, podcasts. So please welcome Adam Stoker, president of Relic Agency. So Adam, welcome.
Hey, Andreas. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me. It's going to be a fun conversation.
Yes, absolutely. We're so happy and excited to have you and your expertise in Relic on the show. So let's get started. I just want to hear a little bit about you, Adam, and the role of Relic.
Yeah, so Relic is a full-service advertising agency that helps destinations and related organizations in the tourism industry get the right message to the right people at the right time. You know, in some cases, that's get more visitors, but in some cases, that's visitor distribution. It totally depends on the destination, right? And so it's really important to us to understand what's happening in the industry and tailor our marketing recommendations for each destination to what they actually need, not just continue to slam as many heads in beds as possible and hope that solves all problems in the destination. So it's a real tailored solution for every destination that we work with.
Wonderful. And it's actually, Adam, just a little bit about yourself. What got you into this role and the work you do today?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a funny story. I asked the same question on my show, and it's always fun to hear how people have stumbled into the tourism industry. I think more people stumble into it than actually intentionally get there, and it was very
Absolutely.
Similar for me. So I studied advertising at Brigham Young University. I guess I should say I'm married. I've got four kids. We live here in Utah in a little town called Salem that's south of Provo. And when I was at BYU, I was actually debating whether or not to even do advertising by the time I was done with my degree, because it was 2009, all the advertising agencies were laying off, not hiring, mm-hmm. and it was really difficult to find a job. I finally found an internship at an agency in Farmington, Utah, that really gave me the foundation that I needed to springboard into the rest of my career. So at the end of my time there, I was debating whether to go to grad school or to take another job. I was actually all ready to go back to Virginia Commonwealth University and do their brand center. It's a great graduate degree for advertisers. And then I saw a little job posting for an advertising agency in St. George that was looking for an account manager. There was three people there at the time, but I went from an agency of 300 people to an agency of three people. But I really was impressed with the owner and we jived really well and thought we could do something pretty cool. So it started out as a car dealership advertising agency. That was all we did was car dealerships and a couple of other things. But my job was to bring in new business and to, you know, grow and develop the organization. And so I just started really getting aggressive and trying to do sales, bring people in. And I happened to walk into the Cedar City, Utah Tourism Bureau. And I asked them if they needed help with their advertising. And they said, well, as a matter of fact, we do. And that was in 2012. And that was what really kickstarted a passion for me for tourism. And we've been in love with the industry ever since. Several referrals later, we've worked with nine different DMOs here in Utah and work with DMOs all over the country. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. This may not be where you wanted me to go here, but 2 years ago, the real challenge that I found was that I felt like we knew destination marketing as well as any other agency in the country. Mm-hmm. But every agency in an RFP does a really good job of saying that they know destination marketing. And so I said, man, what can I do to give myself, to help myself stand out so that people can understand that, yes, I might be at the time 36 years old, but I do know what I'm talking about because I've got a lot of experience in it. And so I started this podcast, the Destination Marketing Podcast. And I had no idea what it was going to become at the time, but it has since become the largest podcast and maybe even media outlet in the industry, where I bring on guests from all over the world to talk about destination marketing, the challenges they have. And it's meant to be very tactical. It's meant to provide specific solutions for destination marketers to understand how to navigate the challenges they have in their organization. And I did that for a couple of years. And now it has become not just the Destination Marketing Podcast, but the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, we're developing podcasts for every job title in a destination marketing organization. We've got the Influencer Marketing for Destinations podcast. We've got your podcast, which is a yep. wonderful addition to the network. We've got the Tourism Media Mayhem, where I've got a digital marketing director and a traditional marketing director, and they fight over where budget should go, whether it's traditional or digital, and they make their case and bring on guests. And we've got an analytics podcast that's coming out. So that's the podcast that we have for DMOs. But then we also have podcasts in the network by DMOs. And that's where we've got several destinations that have launched podcasts promoting their destination. And I'm sure that's part of what we'll talk about today. A couple of the major ones that we have is the Intercoastal Podcast from Beaufort, South Carolina, which was really our pilot podcast to see if this was really going to work. The Ola Laredo Podcast in Laredo, Texas, has been another really interesting case study. Buellton, California is another one, and they've got a unique perspective on their podcast. And several more, and then we've got several more rolling out as well. So really excited about where we've come. We're an advertising agency, obviously, at heart, but this podcast product has become a really unique thing that I think sets us apart from other agencies in the industry.
Yeah, and absolutely. And before kind of getting into more all things podcast, I got to ask, you said four kids. I got one, man. Got any advice? Like,
oh, man. You know what? It's funny. My wife and I actually, we went on a walk after the kids were in bed last night. And we were talking about what we need to do to be better parents. And if I was going to give you advice, I would say, take what you think a kid should do and just throw it out the window and figure out who your kid is at heart and tailor your parenting to that kid instead of trying to fit your kid in the box of what you think they should be. That we literally had that exact conversation last night, and it was kind of we have regrets over the way we've parented a couple of our kids that are really unique, and trying to fit them into what we think they should be, when in reality they are who they are, and we've got to just help guide them along.
All right. Sound parental advice on the Architects of Destination Advocacy. So I guess yeah, I had to add.
I guess that went a little deep, didn't it?
Well, I guess I want to start off kind of, you know, how I heard about your company and your podcast, because this will kind of get into my first question. You know, about probably 2 years ago, I have always been an avid podcast listener. I've loved the format, loved the experience, loved the story, especially as someone who does a lot of content creation through the traditional mediums of our events and our sessions for annual convention or blogs or policy papers. Podcasts in particular have such a wonderful way of extending long form audio conversations. So I sort of wanted to ask for you, were you an avid or podcast listener and stuff before? Like, what was the initial inspiration to say, huh, I don't see podcasts for destinations. What is it that kind of made that spark?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's funny because I don't think I was one of the like early adopters of podcasts, right? When I started my podcast, I had a couple of sports podcasts really that I listened to, and that was about mm-hmm. it. I think since then I've definitely expanded my consumption of podcasts because I have become converted to the medium. The thing that really in my mind is why podcasts are so effective is because almost every other medium requires active consumption. And what I mean by that is if you're watching a movie, it's not like you can multitask very well unless you've seen the movie before and you know what's coming, so you don't need to watch every second of it, right? If we apply it to destinations, destination websites actually require active consumption. I can't read through your website unless I am focused solely on that, right?
Yeah.
But podcasts allows you to consume content in a passive way. So I can be driving to work. I can be at the gym. I can be folding laundry. Whatever it is that I'm doing, I can actually learn while I'm performing another activity. And when time has become the most important asset that any of us have, I mean, we're just talking about parenting, right? Every yep. moment I learn while listening to a podcast and multitasking, that's another minute I can spend with my family. Right.
And yeah, so I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. You look at it that way. And it's like this passive consumption thing isn't going anywhere. This multitasking and learning on the fly isn't going to go away. So we decided to commit to it.
And it's wonderful to kind of hear how you outlined it. I mean, you're right about the currency of time. before the pandemic situation, my commuting to, you know, the work at Destination Nationals, it was 4 hours a day, 2 hours in, 2 hours out. That 2 hours is a lot of time to just try to kill, and podcasts filled that. I think one of the things that was so interesting about it was, I mean, you're obviously aware that, you know, a lot of companies and stuff do advertising through podcasts. And even though it might be considered passive engagement, that brand and that kind of stuff still sinks in. You know, a lot of the podcasts, I remember they would always advertise for like Skillshare or MeUndies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then when that situation happens, like, oh, I need to get new underwear or something like that. Like, oh, MeUndies. I remember I heard that on so-and-so podcast. So even though it is passive, it still very much sinks in and can be deep learned in the same way like you described looking actively on a website or something else.
Yeah, you would be amazed at the number of unimportant stats about the Utah Jazz that I know from listening, and I can regurgitate them pretty quick. And I know it from just consuming those podcasts, even though I'm at the gym or doing something else. You retain audio in a really unique way. I'm definitely not, I probably should look into the neuroscience of it all, but it's fascinating to me how your brain can record audio while multitasking when it can't do that with many other things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right. I think that's something that connects with me about it. I did kind of get in. So you talked about why the impetus to start your own podcast for Desterizations and marketing. What helped got you into or made the link then to say, oh, we should start helping other destination organizations start their own podcast about their own community?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's something I never thought that I would be doing. It didn't even cross my mind when we started my podcast. But as I would have people listening to the show, I would have people ask me, well, can you help us start one? Can you help us mm-hmm. start one? And so I was like, man, we may need to try this. Cause at first the answer was no. and then I was like, well, this is an opportunity. And we actually signed up 5 destinations to be our pilot destinations in March of 2019, March of 2020. And if you think about when that was, two weeks later, everything fell apart. Right. And so, yep. 4 of the destinations actually either paused or dropped off from being those pilot destinations. And Beaufort, South Carolina, decided to stick with it. And so that was our case study that we built to start. Ola Laredo was one of the pilot destinations, but they paused for a couple of months. So they were a little bit later getting started as a result of COVID. And so it was really interesting timing because we thought it was just going to explode in 2020 with the demand that we were getting. And the amount of people that wanted to be part of the pilot program, COVID really slowed that process down. But I think that was really good because it allowed us to figure out the do's and don'ts and mistakes. I mean, I remember the format that I originally presented to these pilot destinations was completely different than where it's actually gone over time. I would say that COVID kind of slowed that down. But that's what led us to do it is the demand at the time. We're like, man, we got to create this or someone else will.
With those destinationization, you know, podcasts you mentioned earlier as part of the intro, have there any kind of preconceived notions or whatnot that have been split or shattered or completely changed now that you are, helping so many destinations now with their podcasts?
Yes. In fact, I thought that time relevance was going to be critical for those podcasts. And what I mean by that is, I built the original outline of what I hoped the podcast would look like of every destination needs to talk about current events in every show so that people know what upcoming events are happening in the destination, right? I said that we've got to give like some kind of travel like a local tips and tricks and stuff like that as well as part of each episode. And it's become something completely different. And I'm actually shocked at the lack of need for time relevant content. What it's become now is most of these destinations are producing evergreen content. And then potential visitors are going back and consuming multiple episodes prior to planning their trip. And one of the unique situations that happened was, I'll never forget the email I got from Rob at Beaufort. Almost a year ago now, he forwarded me an email from some visitors that said, hey, we've been listening to your podcast and we want to know how to get a hold of this business that was on your show. And they're planning out their trip. I think it was an anniversary trip. And that was the first like, holy cow, this is leading to actual bookings, not just stakeholder engagement, right? And that was an interesting turn where we saw that the evergreen content was actually providing as much value as any of the time relevant content that we had originally thought would be the value.
And see, that's what I want to kind of dive into, since you mentioned some of my key, advocacy connect four words: stakeholder engagement, visitors and whatnot. I think one of the things I've loved about the podcast medium is that it seems like a very easy way for destinations to, in the same messaging, connect both with their visitors and their residents, local stakeholders alike. Is that something you found as well for the destinations that are doing their own podcasts?
Yes, 100% yes. I'll give you two examples. I'm going back to Rob at Beaufort because it's been the longest standing one. But Rob had the vision early on of stakeholder engagement is going to be a critical part of this. So he started bringing on guests. I mean, for Beaufort, one of the most popular episodes still to this day, they have a kazoo factory that you can take a tour of there. And so they brought the kazoo factory on and they talked about all the ins and outs of the kazoo factory. And that the listenership on that episode is still far and beyond most of the other episodes that they've done. And who would have thought that a kazoo factory podcast episode would do that? But he brings on unique stakeholders from his destination that really provide the character of the destination and illustrate that in a podcast episode. And it's twofold. One is potential visitors can hear what that stakeholder has to offer, which is great. But in a world where so many people are questioning the value that a DMO is bringing to a destination, and stakeholders will say, oh, I'm putting all that money in, but what is it? What's in it for me, right? Well, Now they have a very tangible demonstration of stakeholder support, which is I'm going to bring you on our show. We're going to go in depth about your attraction or your business and allow you to sell potential visitors on it. And the stakeholders now become big advocates for the DMO as a result. And that's been a real fascinating part. And then I'm going to go to Laredo. The interesting thing about Laredo is they're finding that the vast majority of their downloads are from locals. So these locals are using the podcast to figure out what's happening in the destination or learn about the destination in a way that they haven't already gotten to know the destination. And locals are starting to patronize these businesses more than they had before. And so it's a great resource for both your business stakeholders and your resident stakeholders to feel more bought in to the destination.
So let me ask you this. That's awesome. There's two examples, especially the kazoo, which I wish I had one live now to play it. But I wanted to ask, have you noticed, for destinations that want to get into this, is there a cadence? Like, do you do one episode visitor focus, one episode resident focus, or do you try to walk the line every episode where it meets the needs of both for each episode?
So we allow each destination that we work with to kind of dictate the percentages of that, because there might be destinations with excellent resident engagement, but they struggle with stakeholder buy-in, right? So maybe their focus needs to be much more towards the stakeholders and engaging those business stakeholders. Other destinations really need help with residents. And in fact, I was talking to, I can't remember his name, but he runs the Pocono Mountains destination up in northern Pennsylvania. And it was actually an in-person episode that I did at DI. And when I was taught, by the way, that was such a fun event, Andres.
Oh, thank
we
you.
Haven't talked about that, but I really enjoyed my time in Baltimore. And yes, I wrecked an electric scooter, okay, but other than that, it was a great experience. But I was talking to our friend from the Pocono Mountains, and he talked about how they ran an anti-littering campaign in the destination because the residents were just throwing litter everywhere, right? Huh. And so now they have two major cleanup days per year where the residents will come pick up trash. It's a huge event in the destination. And they've also helped some of the homeless people in the destination be employed by helping to pick up that litter. That, in my mind, is resident engagement for the most part. He has a podcast, and I know that he leverages that on his podcast. It's not in the network, but I think they're doing an incredible job with it. And that's a great example of, you know what, we need to engage these residents more. And then Rob at the Intercoastal podcast has really focused on bringing in those business stakeholders and engaging them more. So I would say it's going to be a little bit different destination by destination, but I do believe that you have to cover both. You have to engage both for your podcast to generate the value that you need it to for a return on investment.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'd agree with me. I mean, a destination is the most uniquely qualified entity to administer, a podcast on the destination. You know, the whole point of a community shared value is every destination needs a brand. That's what we do best, is be the steward of the brand. And I think Desherization is like the most uniquely qualified entity to administer that for their community.
Well, I've actually talked to lots of destinations, Andreas, that they say, oh man, I would start a podcast, but there's someone else in the destination that's really owning that. And my response is, if you're not telling your story and you're allowing someone else to tell the story of your destination, how are you ever going to become a shared community value? You know, in my opinion, you need to own the narrative. And if there's another podcast that has already got a lot of momentum, work together with them. If the destination gets more exposure, everybody wins. Right.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
And so I wouldn't look at it as, oh, well, they've already got the market share. It's no, let's leverage their market share. Let's grow both podcasts and let's tell the story in a more effective way.
Yeah, I mean, that goes beyond just podcasts, but obviously your social media channels, your TikToks and that type of stuff, you know, you're also, if you're not at the table to administer that brand, someone else has got to take that for you.
Well, Andreas, I think you actually bring up a really good point, because when you talk about these other social media channels, other types of content, that's one of the powers of having a podcast that a lot of people don't realize. If you're talking for 35 minutes, let's say, or 25 minutes, if you were to transcribe that episode, that is a ton of really good, engaging content. Well, what we tell our destinations that work with us on these podcasts is, we're going to transcribe those episodes and then we're going to slice and dice that content in 1,000 different ways, right? These are great blog posts. These are great social posts. You can take little audio snippets and you can share them on multiple channels. You can, if you're recording video like you and I are right now, you can actually cut up the video and you can share that on your TikTok or on your Instagram reels or whatever, right? It's creating a massive, I would say like a keystone of your content that you can then version in dozens and dozens of different ways. And content is always a challenge for destinations to have enough. So what a great way to generate a ton more than you are today.
Yeah. And especially organically, especially if you're having guests from your community and whatnot, that's probably the cleanest source of organic content you can ever think to devise for a destination organization through any type of marketing or campaign.
You got it.
I do want to ask and try to transition, since, you know, podcasts have been around, I won't say in their infancy, but they're definitely having such a renaissance right now. I mean, you see all the major players, you know, Spotify's, Apple's, whatnot, double down into that particular industry. I sort of want to ask, from your perspective, though, where would you like to see our industry, our sector go in regards to, you know, the adoption and hopefully a proliferation of podcasts?
Well, I mean, in 2 years, I believe every destination will and should have a podcast.
Is that a challenge or a question?
Well, it's a challenge that I'm personally undertaking, right, to try to get that adoption. But I believe that every destination will. And it's a question of, where are you in the adoption curve, right? And the reason I say that I think every destination will is because they are so dynamic. The industry, and when I say the industry, I mean the podcast as a medium, are growing at an unbelievable rate. I mean, 55% of Americans have now listened to a podcast. 25% of Americans have consumed a podcast in the last 30 days. Wow. And 80% of people make it to the end of a podcast episode. And so when you start to look at that level of engagement in the stats, it's grown at such an alarming rate. It's not going anywhere. And so we can either be on the front end and, you know, gain that market share early on and tell our destination story, or we can wait till other people have already established that share of ear. And in my opinion, it's just a question of when. It's not a question of if.
Such an interesting stat and takeaway about the percent of finishing. I didn't even think about that. But I guess it's one of the benefits of, you were talking earlier about the passive content, that you could pause and start and stop it throughout your day. So you're not dependent upon, this is the only time I can hear it, administer it. You actually get the freedom to kind of finish it at your own pace.
Exactly. I can listen for 20 minutes and I get a phone call, and then maybe later in the day I consume the remainder of the episode, right? That's a very unique, I mean, even on a YouTube video, it's really hard to go back and find out where you were, but the podcast saves it for you, just queued up and ready to go to resume whenever you need.
Do you think then, with further destinations taking on podcasts and what, do you think the metrics and the KPIs of how they look to administer them will change as well?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. We actually are exploring the idea of, improving the reporting mechanism for some of these podcasts, because the challenge you deal with right now is that Spotify has their reporting mechanism, Apple Podcasts has their reporting mechanism, which, by the way, I mean, Apple Podcasts is at least 50% for most podcasts of consumption. And so Apple Podcasts is by far the leader there. But we're looking at ways to do a better job of demonstrating the results of those podcasts. But even with those unique reporting mechanisms that they have that don't really work well together, we're seeing some pretty fascinating stuff. I mean, you can actually see when people stopped listening to your episode, and you can see, I'm sorry, I'm looking for a word that's not popping up. In aggregate, right? So all the people that listen to your show, you can see when, from a percentage standpoint, each of them dropped off. And then you go back and look at that content and say, okay, this type of content was less engaging, you know? And so there's a lot of versatility also with using it as a testing grounds to find out how engaging your content is, and then use that to drive your content strategy across other platforms.
Now, it brings up a good point. I mean, I've listened to your podcast. I've heard you have Zartical and stuff on there. Do you see the podcast data and KPIs as kind of like a treasure trove of data that we're not really tapping into yet in terms of the, you know, contextualization of all the other KPIs we have of, you know, actuations and stuff like that? It's sort of an unlooked one right now.
Yes. So in fact, I think it's twofold. I think we're underutilizing what we have. There's very little action taken from the actual data from podcasts. But then on the other side, I think that we're really early in the amount of data available for podcasts. And so I think you'll see innovations on, identifying who your listener is at a much more granular level over the next couple of years. I think you'll see a lot more content related data. You might even be able, and this is, I'm not building this, I don't know anyone that is, but this is a total hypothesis. I hate when people like make these declarations about what's going to happen and then it doesn't. But I believe you're going to be able to start detracting some keyword data out of podcasts and actually using that keyword data to find out how to engage on other channels or platforms. I think there's a lot coming with podcasts. And in my opinion, the medium is still in its infancy.
Yeah. Oh man, keyword stuff. I mean, that's the... words matter, you know, in our culture and our society. And that's what was the huge impetus for us for starting the tourism lexicon, was specifically looking at keywords and the certain type of keywords used and why they matter. Yeah. I wanted to get into sort of about actually starting one, since you mentioned, you know, early on about, you know, you should be at the table. Like if you're not doing this as a destination, someone else might take that voice for you. For myself and Jack, you know, we were waiting to try to see, to find the best envisionment of what our voice could be, since there's, you know, entities like you and others in the destination marketing space. What could our story be? So I want to ask you, how does one get started in doing a podcast, and where should they start, I should say?
So this is one, it's a question that I love, because I think the idea of starting a podcast is a lot bigger and scarier than it should be. Because in reality, if you've got the Guitar Center software, I don't think it's Guitar Center. What's the one on your Apple machine?
Oh, GarageBand?
GarageBand, Guitar Center. Okay. GarageBand. If you have GarageBand on your Mac, you can start a podcast. You've got the editing software there, and then you can publish through a service. There's multiple publishing services that will release that recording to all the different platforms. Right.
Yeah, for free. You should point that out too. Like it's that barrier of entry is for free in the publishing aspect to some extent.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, it's nearly free.
Yeah.
Like there's I think $10 a month, $8 a month, right, for that publishing software. But other than that, I mean, if you look in the grand scheme of things, that's pretty close to free.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would say that's a really low barrier to entry, because there's tons of software that will publish it for you. The equipment you need really is all you need is a computer. And with software like Zencastr, the one that we're using, I mean, you're right now on the East Coast and I'm here in Utah, and we're easily recording, with no problem. So there's so much technology out there. Obviously, as you grow your podcast, you're going to want to get better sound, right? You're going to want to get different, like maybe you want better music in your podcast. But if you expect to be perfect on day one, I mean, go back and listen to my pilot episode of my podcast if you want to know what a bad podcast sounds like. But getting started and actually convincing yourself to record the first episode, that's the hardest thing to do. Everything else is pretty easy to figure out.
Yeah, and kind of personalization. But what would you say, though, for destinations who want to get started themselves? So beyond just the technical boundaries and then the publishing side of stuff, what do you say to destinations, advice for the, you know, the idea, the story to theme your podcast around?
Yeah, if you've gone through a brand strategy exercise, it should be fairly easy to craft what that story should look like. Because if you understand what your brand is, and I wrote a book called Touchpoints, and that book is based on the premise that your brand is the sum of all of the touch points that your organization has with the outside world. If you understand what the sum of your touch points are, creating a content roadmap for your podcast should be very easy, right? And if you haven't done that, I would almost start with okay, let's look at our brand and let's decide what our best value pieces are and what's the most engaging content that we could put out there. But just build a topic roadmap. And maybe for the first five episodes, maybe we're going to start with the history of the destination, because that's usually a real key part of the story of a destination, right?
Yeah,
and then maybe 2 weeks later, you've got a festival coming up. So your next week's podcast is going to be about this festival, and maybe try to tie in the history of your destination to that festival and draw that line. So now you've engaged the two pieces of content together. And then the next week there's a museum that also, you know, and you start to craft what's that story. But if you understand your brand, it's like the elevator pitch for your destination, right? And so I'll give you an example. Bryce Canyon Country is one of my clients. And they always say, listen, so many people come to our destination for Bryce Canyon. It's one of the most amazing national parks in the world. But man, once they get here, we have so many different cool things that they can do, right? So if I'm building their podcast, I'm starting with Bryce Canyon, right? And then I'm probably going to go with the history of the, because there's a resort that has about 60% of the rooms in the county. And so I'd go to that resort and I'd have a story about kind of the history of that resort and how it got created. And then I would spend the next several episodes on the non-Bryce Canyon activities that there are to do in the area. And so it's basically taking your elevator pitch, segmenting it into different components of the story, and build your content calendar from there.
Awesome. Sound advice. No pun intended, though. So final question I want to ask you. I know you wear many hats at Relic, and I wanted to ask, if you could spend all your time only doing podcasts, would you choose that for yourself?
Can they be in person, or would they be in a studio tucked away somewhere?
Either or.
I think if I could take, honestly, if you get down to what I would love to do for the remainder of my career, I love the advice that I give to destinations on their marketing. But I think what I've fallen in love with more than anything else is the relationships that I've created in the industry. So if I could take my mobile podcast setup and just go meet people at destinations all over the world every day for the rest of my career, I think I would be absolutely thrilled to do so.
That sounds like an incredible goal. So Adam, again, I wanted to thank you, your team, for not only helping us produce this podcast, but of course, all the content and whatnot you're putting out there. Where can people learn more about your own podcast and the podcast you've produced, and where destinations can learn more of Relic?
Yeah, absolutely. So my advertising agency website is relicagency.com. So that's the best way to find out about Relic. And then if you want to know more about my podcast and learn about my podcast, it's destinationmarketingpodcast.com. And then we've got a website launching here very soon for the network that maybe I'll have you add to the show notes later or something like that. But I want to make sure that we get it launched before I put it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, great to hear. Well, again, Adam, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, I'm Andreas Weiseborn. Again, I want to thank Adam and Relic for joining us on this episode of the Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch our latest episode. And to learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org or checking out content through our advocacy section at the site or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.